بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لقد كان في يوسف وإخوته آيات للسائلين. In the story of Yusuf alayhi salam and his brothers, there are very many proofs, lessons for people that would want to inquire. A narrative and a story is not related for entertainment, pastime and show. Many of the novels and the books we read up, after some times we realize that it is just for pastime, just an entertainment, or sometimes it is to get you to believe certain ideas, certain ideologies, certain concepts. But it's related in a story format to make it a little bit thrilling and exciting. And they're trying to pass across a certain concept, a certain belief. So Allah Ta'ala speaks about the story of Yusuf alayhi salam as Ahsan al-Qasas, the most beautiful of stories. People of beauty, their stories must be beautiful as well. Everything of the beautiful is attractive, is good. So when you look within the contents of the story, we find that things that were of a secondary nature, Allah didn't speak about it. Whatever he spoke about, there was some lesson, something for you to think about, something for you to ponder and reflect. إِذْ قَالَ يُوسُفُ لِأَبِي. Yusuf alayhi salam sees a dream, right? On the very step, from the very start of the story, is a lesson. Now, the first lesson that you learn is this, that what do you make of a dream? When a person retires, he goes to sleep, then his soul detaches itself from the body. When it detaches itself from the body, then one becomes oblivious of his surroundings. You don't know what's going on. Things may carry on, but you become oblivious. Now the soul in that state can go through one of three experiences. The one experience that it can go through is the happenings and the events of the day, they play up. Right? Whatever you've been doing throughout the day, whatever you've been thinking about, these are the things that you begin to see. You thought of some deceased persons, now you're seeing some deceased person coming. Kept on thinking about that person that was deceased, so you begin to see him eventually. And incorrectly you begin to feel, now my time is up. And moreover, it happens when a person has got a lot of free time. You got a lot of free time, nothing to do, so your mind goes and wonders about all things that are not required. And then you see mayyads and murda and all the things you see, and whereas it's nowhere near reality, it's because your mind was idling and your mind went into some things, and then you began to see those same things. The second type of dream is shaitan scaring you off. So shaitan finds excitement when he scares you, he frightens you, he takes you, he misguides you, he misleads you, he finds excitement in that. Now here, it's an important point to note. Sometimes it's a beautiful dream, right? But you do not realize that beautiful dream can also be from shaitan, can be triggered from shaitan. You're seeing, for example, with the buzrug of the time, right? You're seeing, that you're meeting some great, great people, right? So you think to yourself, now I'm almost there. And it's possible that it is a trick of shaitan. Because Shaitan is involving you, engaging you in self-admiration. So you may become complacent. See, I'm such a maqam now, I'm seeing this buzruq, that buzruq, this person and that person I'm seeing. I'm seeing myself in such environments, so really, I must have reached some, at some level, for me to go through all these type of experiences. So shaitan is creating some type of complacency, and some type of self-admiration in you, so that the help of Allah Ta'ala can snap off. If you're going to get involved in this, then Allah's help is gone. And the third type of dream that you see, this is now min al-Rahman, it is from Allah Ta'ala. The important thing in all this, it's qala Yusufu li abi. When he went through this experience, now what was the right thing for him to do? He relates his experience with his father. How important it is to relate to someone that is senior, someone that is experienced, someone that is righteous. This has been always, and it should continue, that you got someone elder, it's a father, it's a mother, it's a granny, it's a grandfather. But there is someone elder in the house, and that elder person should be consulted, should be referred to. The elder person that you're consulting must be such that he must have these three qualities, right? One is, he is righteous. He is consumed by good, he wants to do the good. In himself, he is good. Because if you want to consult with anybody and everybody, that person may not be righteous. He may give you a wrong opinion, he may give you a wrong suggestion. Right? And you may only discover this after some time. Right? For example, it's your business hour clashing in with your work, right? For a client, and your business is doing very well, or like you have this matriculants or university students, I think every year you get this same question coming up all the time, right? So the examination is coinciding with Juma namaz, right? Now they will ask, now what should we do? So if it is not a person that is committed to deen, he'll say this examination is one off thing in the whole year, right? When you fail in this, then you have to repeat the entire year. So the Juma namaz, you can do it later, make zor, Allah Ta'ala will make maaf. So he'll give you this type of an understanding. I just want to interject, speak about something now. I'll come back to this topic. When we talk of piety, then people generally say, don't become too pious. Become too pious, so gandati, you'll go mad. That's a general take in people, or a tasbih all the time, sitting too much to recite Quran Sharif, so I'll get mad. But he's sitting with a computer the whole night, he doesn't get mad. He sees a film the whole night, they won't get mad. He's overworking himself, exerting himself in the business, they won't get mad. But if he's exerting himself a little bit in the right thing, he'll get mad. Now, I was explaining this to the Ustad this morning, that you get a type of a person who is old-fashioned, he's got his own ways. Right? He's looking for the right way, and within himself he's simple, down to earth, and he's a simple person. His ways may be old-fashioned. Right? So the home is old-fashioned, it's simple. Finishes may not be there. Right? Because he doesn't want to incur any debt. And he doesn't want to exert himself just for worldly material fancy and looks. He doesn't want to exert himself. So he's quite an old-fashioned person. Now you come across such a person, you see he's old-fashioned. He's bent in his old ways. Not that he's miserly, but he feels it's not worth the while spending my time, my energy, my brains, in all these type of things. After all, if death strikes now, then, so that death is so prominent in him, that these things are not serious things. But of an old kurta is also alright. Not that he'll deliberately wear that old kurta, but if it is the only thing there, he'll wear that. He won't make it a point, now I got this kurta here, now I need to have this type of a jacket, and that type of a socks, and that type of a trouser. There, it's there, it's not there, it's not a big deal. One of those things. So his life is governed by simplicity. Eating in simple food. Simple ways, right? But he's bent on the sunnah, on deen, any aspect of deen, he's bent on it. He doesn't want to compromise in this regard. So he goes all to the old-fashioned things. For example, he's got his parents, he's got his elders, so he'll consult with them. But they are my elders, right? So I'll consult with them. He will not take decisions in his own hands. He will think to himself, well, I don't have that level of experience. These people have that level of experience. They have seen life more than I have seen. So my fortune and my luck is to go and ask them, to go and consult with them. Now the modern thinking is that, well, you're a boss of your own. You earn much more than what they earn. You're giving them business ideas. Then what's the need for you to consult with them? That's the modern idea. And this person is quite an old-fashioned person. Or not. Let me go with them. So the old things appeal to him, right? And things that are coming out new, where it is wrong, or he's not clear about it, then he's not experimenting with that, right? If there's something to do with photography, I'm not sure about it, or it's not in conformity with the old ways, so rather leave it out. I don't want to get into it. Now, you get into a corporate environment, and you must sit mixed up. Boy, girl, everybody must sit mixed up. So I don't feel comfortable, but I'm quite relaxed in the old way. I didn't have any problems. Yeah, I don't know I'll get into a problem. So it's not wise for me to get into a problem and then try and reel myself out. I know this way, it worked for so many people. Millions of people, they worked their lives in a certain way and they went right. Now, why must I go and experiment something else? So he won't get into that, right? Into a mixed gathering, he won't go. Photography, he won't go. He'll think to himself, well, my elders, etc., they were not for photography, they were not for music, so leave it out. They were not for extravagance. If it was a marriage, it was a simple affair. What was within their means, simple, and according to the sunnah, this is how they did it, right? So the whole world is up in arms against him because of his simplicity. Your home is simple. Your eating is simple. Right? Your ways are simple. The circle of friends are simple. I was explaining to the students, you know, when we were young, small, very small, that some of our elders used to explain to us. And when you're taking up friends, they look for three things. And we were very small at the time, 6, 7 years of age. But they would impress upon us that look for three things when you're taking up friends. One is a child, whoever you are associating with, accompanying, must be committed to his namaz. Come what may, it's namaz time, he's seeing the masjid. Right, as the child, he won't do the namaz in the best way, but he's doing it. He's doing his namaz, he's particular about his namaz. At the age of 7, 8, there isn't a day, there isn't a namaz that he's missing out. Whether he's tired, not tired, but he's got his namaz. The second thing that they would instill into us is the friends must be such people who have good tongues, who don't lose it, who are not bordering on ghibat, unnecessary talks, right? Slandering, making false allegations, carrying tales. So the circle of friends must be people that have a good control over the tongues. When they have a good control over the tongue, you enjoy their company. Sometimes it happens that you don't have that circle of friend. Now, the person is impolite in his speech. It's aggressive. Small little thing triggers his anger. So when small little things will trigger his anger, you don't know whether to talk to him or not. Because you may be talking to him in a good note, in a friendly atmosphere, and something may just trigger his anger. You got him on the wrong end, or the wrong time. And something just triggered his anger. Now you don't know how to cover yourself. You don't know how to defend yourself. So he must be good in his ways, in his talks, mostly, not speaking lies, not making allegations, not carrying tales. Right? No useless talk, no talks of fantasy and romance, etc., woman, etc. So the talks are simple but easy going. So that was the second thing that they used to impress upon us. This is the circle of friend that you need to take. It's good in their tongue. Now imagine that child that is good in his tongue. Right? He won't get into trouble, won't get into fights, don't get into arguments. Right? And overall he'll be using his time correctly. So that was the second thing that they used to impress upon us. But the third thing I couldn't agree with, I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand. It took me about 30, 40 years to understand what they were saying. It was the third thing they should say, keep on seeing us. They should keep on, some of the elders will see us. At the age of 7, 8, don't associate with the wealthy. Super wealthy, don't associate. The average to below average, that's the class you must associate with. The wealthy or the super wealthy, then don't you associate. Now that I couldn't understand, I couldn't come to terms. Why are they saying this? And they would drum it into you, or they would say it in some way or the other, but they will keep telling you the same story. And each time I remember, as a child, each time they would say the story, my mind would ask, but why? Although I would listen to them. My elders now, they know more than I know. The experience is more vast than my experience. But then it takes about 40, 50 years, then you realize that this is what they were talking about. So your luck and your fortune is just to listen to them. Some of the mysteries of what they're saying will come to you later on. Now if your circle of friends, for example, is wealthy, he's driving a Porsche, he's driving a Mercedes, a Ferrari, and you're driving a small old Corolla, right? Will you feel comfortable in that company? Will you feel comfortable? You won't feel comfortable. He's got a dawat at his place, a feast, right? And he organized the works, whole thing from Alif to Wassalam. What he's organized, the equipment that he's got, you know. I'm impressed about it, called me. But now I'm thinking there must be a return dawat. The return dawat I can't afford to his level. I'll feel awkward, I'll feel uncomfortable. Now somehow I'll need to bring up that money and impress upon him that I can do what you can do as well. I can match what you are doing. So I land myself into problems. He is wearing a shirt. I was asking one friend, you know. So you know about shirts and jeans and all, t-shirts. So I asked him, just in passing, that one jeans now, what may it cost? What it may cost, you know? He said, no, the ones that are more expensive, with the patched knees and all that, that will be about 2,000-3,000, right? And I said, the shirt? He said, no, don't talk about the shirt. Now I'm thinking, hey, the shirt must be something different. It must be some pearl or some diamond or something. So no, the branded names, maybe about 8,000, 9,000 branded names. So I asked, "Bhai, is there something special about it or is it just the brand?" He said, just the brand, nothing else. It's a t-shirt only with the brand. Right? Now if I were a circle of friends, right, that are living like this, would I feel comfortable with that? I won't feel comfortable. Now I'll look for it. Hey, I need to get that brand name. Or send someone to India and that imitation brand, you know. Just import that, so that I can fit into the company. Now you see the difficulty that I'll have to, I'm not my normal self, I'm abnormal just to get into a normal relationship. So why must I get myself into that type of difficulty for this? What am I going to get out of the whole thing? After everything is said and done, I get nothing but just, I just get myself fit into a company. You know, I was with Mr. Ismail, you know. You know, we had a meeting there, Damshlanga we had at his residence, you know. So now, I'll be talking big, but apart from talking big and impressing upon people, do I get anything out of it? Anything do I get out of it? Anything material, anything spiritual, any deen? And if in the event you can't reach up there, then either I will go to a loan shark, or to a bank, or steal and rob, or make false promises to people, just to be there. One friend was here, so he does the accounts in some shop. Big business, right? Muslim tile shop, right? So, he says, one day the boss came in, and the boss gave instructions that all Muslim clients, just scratch them off, I don't want to see them. The Hindu keep them on, the white keep them on, the black keep them on, but the Muslim clients just scratch them off. Because they're bad. In their payment, they're very bad. They're stretching. They can fly, they can buy cars, etc. But they can't pay me, they can't settle my accounts. They can stretch me all the time. So just crush all of them out. See, now when you get into that circle, then you have to toe the line. In order for you to toe the line, you need to have that type of finishes. In order for you to have that type of finishes, you need to have that type of wealth. You don't have that type of wealth, then you have to rob someone, cheat someone, make false promises. Do something to get that, so that you can live at that lifestyle. But after doing the entire homework, did you get anything out of it? So what was the simplest thing? What was the easy thing? Right? I would do it out of laziness, because I don't want to exert myself. Right? But apart from my laziness, I ask you, what is the more practical thing? What is the easier thing? Right? Just have the right circle of friends. The right circle of friends, they will never look down upon you. They'll never look down upon you, no matter what you are living in, but they will never look down. People that are simple, straightforward, clear. So it's easy to be living with them. But you go above that, now to maintain the standard becomes difficult. You have to exert yourself, you have to labor hard, just so that you can afford that. At the end of the year, or at least twice in the year, the friends are going out for a holiday. So you need to have that wealth that you with your wife and children, you must be able to afford that holiday. Now I ask you all, is it worth it? Do the maths and see whether it's worth it. Are you getting something out of it? Or is it because the whole world is doing it and I need to do it as well? The whole world says that if you keep working and you don't take a break, you'll go mad. And how do you take a break? You must spend 100,000-200,000 rands a year just on a holiday trip for you and for your wife. So I must do it. Sometimes I see within my friends also there's extremism, right? On a holiday they can bust 200,000 rand, 300,000 rand, right? But in the home, if the trap is dripping, you're wasting money, man. You're wasting money on this. You mustn't waste money. That light is switched on, switch it off. But on the other end, you look now on a car, on some comfort, so much of money is wasted that you don't bat an eye. Here, that one drop of water that is wasted, there you talk so much. So both are wrong, right? But why this, so much of concern, so much of emphasis here, and this is total disregard. Whereas this is wastage, that is wastage. Just to go and select one tile, you have to pay 500 rand to go to that place, or 1000 rand to go to Johannesburg, to select the right tile and come back, right? Now, I ask you, is this wastage or not? It's a small little discomfort of the eye. Just for the comfort of the eye. So much of money, so much of wealth. So anyway, what we are getting at is old-fashioned. People talk of old-fashioned, right? So you say, no, I don't know about this. I can't relate to this. So I don't want to get myself involved. So I won't go into photography, for example. I won't get into a mixed gathering. Right? I won't go into music. I won't go into overdrafting and financing. All these things seem to be a little bit foreign to me. And because it's foreign to me, so I'm not getting myself involved. I don't know the nitty-gritties, but I'm not getting into it. Right? I don't want to just get into a phone. Why I don't want to get into a phone? Because I don't know what it's got. There may be some good in it, and there may be some bad elements, but I don't know really what it contains. Right? Sometimes I dare to ask that question. Allah Ta'ala forgive me. Anybody has got a smartphone, a more expensive phone, what percentage of people can tell me that mistakenly they didn't see something wrong? Not deliberately, mistakenly. Something popped up, like they say. Something popped up, right? And something that popped up, then it poked the heart as well. What percent of people can tell me that they got all these phones here, these gadgets, but it didn't affect the heart? So now this person says, no, I don't want to get into all this thing. I'm not sure about it, I'm not clear. So the whole world may speak out against him. And they say, you're old-fashioned, you're not with the times, you don't know what's cutting in the world. That's the type of comment that they will pass. Right? But now look what Rasulullah will say. One is what the world will say, the whole world, they will gang up against you, they will speak out against you. They will talk 101 things, they talk, right? Said, I don't know about this thing. Yes, I know this much, I must stick to the sunnah. be good to people, my friends and my families, I must be good to them. Small little things, I must prepare and give it to my family, to my household, or to my neighbors, be good to them. If there is any difficulty coming from their end, I must tolerate, but I must show kindness towards them. So these are things that I've learned, simple things I've learned. Now people are looking down upon you. Say, well, this little small thing like samosa you're sending somewhere. You made some achar and you're sending somewhere. So what are you going to get out of this whole thing? What are you going to get out of this? Now look at it, right? What are you going to get out of it? So, the hadith says, Bada al-Islamu ghariban. Wasayaudu ghariban. Fatuba lil-ghuraba. Now let's try and understand this hadith, but understand it properly, correctly. Islam. When you talk of Islam, then the real meaning of Islam is humble submission. Submission with humility, right? That's Islam. It's Islam's way of Islam, humble submission, humble, submissive way. It started off in a way that it was not recognized, not popular. Nobody knew about it, a foreign thing, something unique, something out of the mainstream. It's not in the mainstream, it's out. You're doing things, but it's not in the mainstream. Right? You don't see people living in posh homes and all that, making some samosa or someone passing to someone. Do you see that happening? You don't see it. I'll need to come and see you at appointment, with an appointment. And you come and see me with an appointment. So the life becomes very difficult, very, very difficult. Here it's an easy flow. You going, I'm coming, you going, I'm coming, right? Simple things, right? So this way of humble submission, this is Islam, how it started off. That woman, she didn't know much. She was not exerting herself in ibadat. But yes, this much she did. She knew how to make some cheese, right? And she cut some pieces. This neighbor here, that neighbor, Muslim, non-Muslim, whether it was a black, whether it was a white, whatever it was. But she passed on the generosity. She shared the generosity. And she earned a jannat. Simple little things. And that one was a very, very high profile, doing a lot of namaz, etc. But she's catching in Jahannam. That leave her on the rest, it was cruel towards its cat, right? And because of that, it's getting punished in Jahannam. So you see the simple acts of generosity where you tolerate others, but yet you can still show kindness. You tolerate, somebody is talking nonsense, someone is hurting, someone is, whatever, whichever way they are doing it, but you tolerating. Yet you are returning all that with kindness, with comfort, with compassion, right? So Allah Pak, this Nabi Sam says that this thing started off like this, humble submission, way of Islam, started off unknown, foreign, like parai chisti, anokhi chisti, not known, unknown, not in the market, right? And there will be a time that this Islam will go through this for the second time, came out like this, and then there will be a repetition, it will go through the same. So those that will practice deen, then they will be backwards. You don't know what's cutting. Your woman cannot drive. You don't have a posh car. You're not in the fast lane, right? So you are very slow. You are backwards, right? You're not in the fast lane. Why? Because you practice in the sunnah. Simple ways. You're making going for gush, making mulaqat. People are shouting. You're still going. You're taking all that on. Yet you're still showing generosity, love, not getting into a fight. Hey, this person is very backwards. But then at the end of the whole equation, what's happening? Fatuba lil ghuraba. Imagine now you're ending up your life. Just look at this for a moment. And at the end of your life, you are receiving this good news from maybe some congratulations. You're ending up your life, right? Like Muhammad Sahib, Allah Ta'ala fill his grave with noor, right? Simple person, right? But now at the end of his life, he's got this. Nabi Sam gave him a hug, right? And he says, congratulations. I ask you, in the house of Allah Ta'ala, is it worth the price? Is it not worth the price? You went through all that simplicity, that rough. People told you things, you took everything. But at the end, as you're coming to the end of this journey, he just gave you hours. And just passed the compliment. Congratulations. So really, we go off because we're not looking at the end. Someone has to pass on comment, oh, you don't have a smartphone, you don't have this thing here, you don't have that type of kurta, that type of finish. And just to be with the Joneses, you do this and make a lot of adjustments. But at the end, we lose out. Is it worth the while? Is it worth the while? The company, the friends are saying that. But is it worth the while? You went through the whole thing. And for that moment, just imagine as you're ending your life, if there isn't that reception, right? Then what's the... It's, well, all the toiling of yours, you didn't get that reception, right? I ask you, is it worth it? You didn't get that reception. Was it worth it? Because it wasn't worth it at all. Whatever you did, you have done, or it was for the glitter of the eye, for the comfort of the eye. Some things may have been permissible, something must have been of a doubtful nature. But you lost out, and you lost out big way. You lost out, and you lost out eternal. And here you gain, and you gain a big way. In this life, someone just has to see Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam with a smile on his face, smiling at him, he feels so much. But in the real life, that is, as you're meeting up with death, and at that time Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has to say this much to you, Tuba lil ghuraba, congratulations to you. This congratulations are for the same people that are backward, simple in their ways, going on the way of Sunnah. This congratulation, this special congratulation from Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is directed to this people. So I tell you, there's no level of qurbani and sacrifice that can pay for this. So it's worth every difficulty that you went, every hardship you went through, every criticism you went through, every type of type of remark that you had gone through, is worth the while. You had gone through a constraint, you had gone through a difficulty, a criticism, people ran you down, they spoke about you, whatever it was. But at the end, فَالْيَوْمَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مِنَ الْكُفَّارِ يَضْحَكُونَ. You're going to see who's going to laugh the best. You're going to see that. We're talking of lessons, right? So death is also a lesson. In fact, they say, death is the best teacher. Everything else will teach, but the best teacher is death. You can see the person is motionless, is gone, never to be seen again. You can see it in front of your eyes. And you can be in his place tomorrow. He is in that spot. Tomorrow it could be your turn. So can there be a better teacher than death? So we're coming back to the stories that we learn in the story of Yusuf alayhi salam. It's called a Yusuf li Abi. Yusuf alayhi salam speaks to his father, right? You're going through experience is a biological change within you. Then what are you supposed to be doing? Speak to your elder. You got your father, you got your mother, right? And so important it is. See, this whole circular system wants you to have an independent mind. Independent thought and independent mind. And the whole Islam is telling you, no, you just follow. Make sure of the person that you're going to follow, but just follow. The mysteries you will discover later on. Like I say, I didn't know. When I was a child, I never knew why my elders were telling me, don't meet up with the wealthy. I didn't know about it. Really, I didn't know. And I didn't even appreciate that. Because some of my friends were quite wealthy. The people, I won't say friends, but the people that were in the class, all the exciting, thrilling, right, the way they talk, you know, that American accent and all they have. You know. So that time when you're young and you get that American accent, you know, so you feel very high. Hey, see how this person is talking. Later on, you realize it's just nothing more than a farce. It's just a front. What do you get out of it? Nothing more. It's just to impress the person. But in the meanwhile, it's not a... See, we should be apprehensive here. If it's a wealthy person, you don't look down upon him. See, as the Shaykh al-Hadith brings a very important note here. The more important thing is your heart shouldn't be with the wealthy. Your heart mustn't be in them. Yes, you will show all the respects. But your heart is not with them. If your heart is with them, then you are in problems. Because you are aspiring for that. And you are asking for that. You want some favor or the other all the time. That is, your heart is there. At heart, you must have an aversion. But as for this associating, etc., then our ulama or buzuganadin, what they say, as far as possible, for your needs, don't go up to them. But if they do come to you, then they say, Ni'mal amir ala babil faqir. When that person, that wealthy person came to see you, then he has got the title of ni'm. He's got the title, he's an excellent person. That in spite of his position worldly wise, yet he had the heart to come and meet an ordinary person, right? So he's an excellent person. Because of his excellence, now you respect him. Ni'mal amir ala babil faqir. See, your behavior will be different. Your heart will be different. And your behavior will be different. Now, how we have reversed the whole thing, we'll be rude, we'll be aggressive, we'll be impolite with the wealthy. But our heart will be filled to the brim, you know. Hey, something must pass over to me. I am teaching him so many things. At least one thing must pass over to me. That Ferrari is got parked off, at least it must come on my side. See how our minds are working. In our interaction, we are aggressive, we're impolite, we're rude, right? But our hearts are desirous for that. I ask you, is that the right behavior? The right behavior is ni'mal amir ala babil faqir. It doesn't end there. Wabisal faqir ala babil amir. And that ordinary person, that simple person, is always seen going to the wealthy, associating with them, then he is a bisal faqir. He is the worst of persons. Because his heart is filled up with that. It's brimming with that. It's spilling over with wealth. He wants that. So, at heart, he's a different person. And on the tongue, he's a different person. One murid, we're talking of dreams, right? So one murid says to his sheikh, now he got a peer, he says to his peer, you know, I saw a dream. What's the dream you saw? So he says that I saw a dream that my heart, my hands were in number two, excreta. And sheikh, you know, your hands was in honey. Say, yeah, you, dunya ke kutte hai. The dogs of the dunya. So you must be ready. Number two, your hands must be soiled up in that. And see, we are park people. We're so nice, you know. So that's why my hand is soaked in honey. So the murid says to the sheikh, Hazrat, you know, but the dream doesn't end there. You know, your hands was in my mouth and my hands was in your mouth. Whether it was a made-up story or whether it's real, but it's conveying a message that from, you know, verbally I hate you, I dislike you, but my heart wants you. Right? And it's supposed to be the other way around. See, if it's a true dream, what is meaning, what it refers to, that your heart wants it. Outwardly you're showing something else, but your heart wants that. So, your behavior is supposed to be the other way, that you will not run after them. You will not aspire for them. Yes, your heart desires that they can see the right as well. Being a Muslim, inshallah he's got a good heart. Inshallah he may be better than we, most of us, right? But for us it is dangerous that we go into that territory. He knows how to guard himself. He knows how to take care of himself. But we, perhaps we may fall into this, we may not know how to guard ourselves. So Allah Pak, save me and save him as well. And I say that we may not know how to take care of that. This is coming from the founder of Darul Deoband. We need to know our roots. Really, we don't know our roots. That is why we go in all different directions. Allah Qasim Nanuti Sahib Rahmatullah is the founder of Darul Deoband, right? So at the time, that he is receiving a salary of 5 rupees a month. Right? That was his salary. At that time, he gets an offer. People saw his worth. And they offered him 3,000 rupees, from 5 rupees to 3,000 rupees, right? Now look at his response, immediate response, look at it. Hyderabad, that time Hyderabad was like an independent state. Are you talking of before the 1947, when the whole India was totally different, like an independent state. So the Nawab of Hyderabad had called him with an offer of 3,000 rupees, whereas his salary is 5 rupees. Now look at Molana's reply. What I replied to this person was, you see, I earn 5 rupees, right? And for my needs and my family's needs, then I need just 3 rupees. I sort myself out, my family, everybody is seen to comfortably with 3 rupees. And each month I have an excess of 2 rupees. And it's a struggle really for me to go and find the right recipient. I have to look now, is this the right recipient? That's the right recipient? That's the right recipient? I have a struggle to locate them. Now with 2 rupees I have a problem to locate the recipient. What will happen to me? I get mad if I get this 3,000. So, with respect to ourselves, we feel, no, I don't know how to take care of it. So the better thing for me is not to have this. This person here, he knows how to take care of it, so Allah has given it to him. That is why Mawlana Qasim again, I'm talking about one story. And the second story I'm explaining is one person gave Mawlana that amount, cash. In fact, double the amount, 6,000 he gave Mawlana. And he says to Mawlana, you can do whatever you please, you know. Distribute it, do whatever you please, right? So now look at Mawlana's response to that aversion. Mawlana says, you know what? I think you gave it into the wrong hands. And I'm requesting you to take this back because Allah Pak knew my weakness, so He didn't give me that wealth. He knew that you were capable, so He gave it to you. If you are capable, you will go and distribute it yourself. See that aversion. Now, what the story impresses upon us is we will do the work of deen. Right? We'll work. Allah Ta'ala will take care of the rest. But if we run after that wealth, what happens to the wealthy loses respect for us. Okay, if we are running after wealth, then you are running after wealth as well. If our work is commercial, it's a commercial venture, then your deeni work also is a commercial venture. There's no difference between me and you. So the respect that he's got for deen, he lost. And how he lost it through you. He lost the respect that he had for deen because of our behavior. So, the real aversion, that aversion, dislike, to the point of need necessary we took, because we need to run our lives, but beyond that, we showed an aversion. Eventually, that person begins to feel, no, this is something, it's not the right thing to multiply, it's not the right thing to pile up. We talk of Hazrat Mawlana Qasim Sahib Rahmatullahi, right? And then now we talk of Mawlana Mahmood Al-Hasan, who's the second greatest in Darul Deoband, right? If you look at the whole history, then he's the second greatest. You talk of any Buzruq, and that Buzruq is a student of, direct student of Shaykh Ul-Hind Rahmatullahi, Mawlana Ilyas Sahib, Mawlana Madani Sahib, Mawlana Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullahi, Mawlana Arwar Shah Kashmir, everybody is his student. But then if you look at him, now you think, hey, where this beggar came from? Simple clothing, wearing a lungi, simple clothing, right? Very, you know, it's like an embodiment of simplicity. An embodiment of simplicity. Right? So one wealthy person, he now wants to take bayat, right? A lot of people that are coming to mind, and people are suggesting this person here, that person and that person. So he says, you know what, I'm not interested in anybody. And if I do have to take, bayat, I'll take at Mawlana Mahmood Hasan Rahmatullahi's hands. But he's just turning me away. He's not showing too much of interest towards me. So the person asks him, but just explain yourself. What do you mean? So he says, you see others, they show some consideration for me and all that, whatever. For my position. I am such a wealthy person, they show that consideration. And when I go to him, then he's got a total aversion for me. When he's got that aversion, I understand that this person's aversion for wealth is so much that he sees me like filth. So this is the right person that I need to connect with. See, so the respect that the wealthy have for you is in proportion to how much of aversion you have got for his wealth. But that aversion must be at heart, not on your tongue. Don't go and speak about his things. Don't embarrass him. Don't disgrace him. Don't be impolite, don't be aggressive, right? The idea is for us to get to Jannat and to invite others as well. If in the khidmat of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, there was a person like Hazrat Bilal radiallahu anhu who didn't have enough for the next day, then there was a person like Abdul Rahman ibn Auf radiallahu anhu who had millions, in fact billions at the time his estate being winded. Right? Hazrat Zubair radiallahu anhu, billions, not millions, billions at the time. So if he had this person, he had that person as well. But then look at his interaction, how he interacts, how he related to them. Now we interacting with the wealthy, and each one of us is saying, hey, I need to make these digits. I need to make these projections. So our interaction, socializing, is not right. And the delil, the proof of it is not right, we are wishing for his wealth. We are wishing for his wealth. So he feels honored. See, people are wishing for my type of life. So I am the person that is honorable, not this person here. Otherwise, if this was despicable, then he wouldn't have been inclined towards it. So anyway, we're talking about Yusuf alayhi salam. We just drifted a little bit. Right? In a majlis, this is what happens. See? Generally, what happens? It's an X-ray. It's a scanning machine, right? And the X-ray will not always tell you something according to the topic that you want. It will scan everything. You went for the teeth and it showed you the toes. Right? So that X-ray, that machine will show you anything and everything. Maybe you don't even imagine that this will come up. But that was the thing that came up after that. Right? So Yusuf al-Islam relates to his father. So relating to your elders. Now the elder must be really an elder. So for him to be an elder, he needs three things. He needs to be righteous, like I explained just now, right? Number two, he must know the thing that you are consulting. Something that you are consulting, he must understand. He must have an understanding of it. If it's business, you can't go to a doctor, right? If it's medical science, then you can't go to an engineer, right? So the subject that is being discussed, he must be quite acquainted with the subject. He knows how to advise you. That's the second thing. And the third thing he must be also well acquainted with is he must be honest. فَلْيُشِرْ بِمَا هُوَ صَانِعٌ لِنَفْسِي. Right? He must be honest. If you ask him, you know, I want to go and buy this property here, or make this investment, or I want to buy that property, right? And if I tell you, no, don't go for it, in the meanwhile, I go behind your back, and I go and buy that property, I ask you, is that being honest? Honesty is something totally different. I must see what is better for you. As Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali used to relate a story of India. Alamgir Aurangzeb Rahmatullah Ali. Honesty, right? Alamgir Rahmatullah's opponent was Sevaji. Right? Sevaji was his opponent. And Alamgir Rahmatullah had him crushed down. He was almost finished now. Like he's battling for survival. He had smashed him down so badly. Now, at that time now, he goes up to his mother and he complains, you know what? An army, it marches on his stomach. Now, our fortress hasn't got any resources for keeping the army alive, for keeping the soldiers alive. We don't have anything. And we need this army to carry on, but we don't have anything here. And when the army marches on its stomach, but it doesn't have anything to live for, how is it going to continue the fight? Now what do we do? Here the opponent is so strong, Alamgir Rahmatullah is so strong, and here we are so weak. So what do we do? So the mother says, you go and ask Alamgir Rahmatullah Ali for advice. Ma, how can you say such a stupid thing? He's after my brother. We are fighting. It's a war. It's not a brother. It's not a brother. We are fighting at each other's throats. Right? And he is just waiting to annihilate me, to defeat me completely. And he's got me where he wants. It's just a matter of time. And I'll be history afterwards. So look at the mother's advice. The mother says that what you are saying is right. But ye Alamgir aadmi hai na, ye apne deen ke sachche hai. This Alamgir is true to his deen. When he's faithful to his deen, he's truthful to his deen, then his deen, a teaching of his deen is al-mustasharu mu'taman. The one that is consulted is one that is truthful and honest. The one that is consulted must be truthful and honest. So when the one that you're consulting with must be truthful and honest, then he will give you an awful honest opinion. Even though in showing that honest opinion, it may be going against his own grain. It's going against him completely, but he's showing you the right thing. No matter what, but he's showing you the right thing. So anyway, he signals. There used to be a way in those days to signal some peace fire, you know. They stop the war for a day or 2 days, and both sides will agree, they stop. So when he signaled, Alamgir also stopped. They stopped on this side. Some negotiation and carrying on. So he says to Alamgir Rahmatullah, Sevaji, a Hindu, this after Alamgir Rahmatullah, he says, you see, I am now at a point where it's a matter of days, I will just be finished. Annihilated, I will be history. And the reason is I don't have any stocks, no food I have got. My army has no food. Everything is depleted, now what do we do? So Alamgir Rahmatullah says, alright, what you do? We sign a peace treaty for 10 years. In the 10 years, I will not fight you, you will not fight me. And you have got all the time to go and build up your resources. People, resources, stocks, whatever you want. If you want help from me, I am prepared to give you that help as well. But everything that you want, you go and pile up. Right? After 10 years, then you want to start a fight again, then we'll go back into fighting. But I give you the 10 years. Anyway, the whole peace treaty is signed. They stop the war on this side, that side, both are gone. Now Alamgir Rahmatullah, he's got his own circle, they are giving it to him. Two problems you have got with you. You know, you had the man right at his throat, you could have just throttled him, finished him up. And you gave up. And number two, what is his business, 10 years? 10 years respite you have given the person. So Alamgir Rahmatullah's answer was, Mera maqsad to mulk nahi hai. Na hukumat hai, na mulk hai. Mera maqsood to deen hai. My objective, my goal is not kingdom, not ruling, wealth, etc. My objective is deen. And my deen is telling me that man came for advice, I must show him what is better for him. So I am a slave primarily to my deen. Not to wealth, not to kingdom, not to authority, not to power, not to control. That's not my goal. My goal, I am a slave of my deen. My deen commands me that I must be truthful and honest. Right? So I gave him the honest opinion. I gave him the honest suggestion. I gave him honest advice. Go ask for peace treaty. And you stop the war for 10 long years. You prepare yourself. I prepare myself. We come back. And the second thing that you ask for is, where's this business you've got? You signed a peace treaty for 10 years. Well, do you know your Islamic history? At Hudaybiyah, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had signed a peace treaty against Quraysh for how many years? 10 years. And Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was in a position of command, a position of control at that time. He was in an authoritative position. They could see the numbers are just swelling. From what they were, they're moving up, and they're moving up. Right? But yet Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has given them that respite. Oh, go and prepare yourself for 10 years. After 10 years, we'll see. Primarily, see that our goal, our sight, our vision is totally different. As long as that vision is right, that goal is right, then we're not worried about numbers. Now, we begin to measure our prosperity with numbers and figures. I got this amount of support, I got this amount of figures, so I am prosperous. So, that was not their goal. Their goal was totally different. What was the level, what was the level of loyalty? Did you breach the trust in any way? Right? What was the level of your faithfulness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that was what was being measured, right? So anyway, we're talking about relating and, you know, relating to your elders. You got a problem, you got a situation, go and speak to them, ask them. Right? And the elder must have these three things. To the extent our ulama say, that even if a youngster is promising, and he comes to you, he's asking you, that I won't take admission in your madrasa, what do you think? Is that the right idea? Now imagine the child is promising. He is a prospective child. He can have a good future, radiant future. He will be a model of your madrasa. You know, he will be talking like a reflection of your madrasa. But if in your understanding, you feel it's better for this child to be in that madrasa, then honesty requires that you guide him accordingly. Don't try and pull that credit for your madrasa. See that honesty, that sincerity. I ask you, any of us have got that? Right? Any of us, you know, I must get that respect. Somehow the other must pull him, I'll get that virtue. Though in the bottom of your heart, you know that this is the better thing for that child, but we will never advise him accordingly. See, sincerity. So when they talk about sincerity in tabligh, we just think that 6 points is such a simple thing. I learned that 6 points, it's over. I tell you, bhai, it's not about just learning it off. It's about that color rubbing onto you. And the proof of it, that it's the color rubbing deep into you, is this. In the grave, you are asked about three questions. Ma rabbuk, ma dinuk, right? Ma kunta taqulu fi hadha rajul. What's your Rabb? Who's your Rabb? Who's your Nabi? And what you have to say about this person here? These are the three questions, right? I ask anybody that is seated here, that if you learn the answers to all these three questions a million times over, but you didn't practice any one of them, are you going to be able to give those answers correctly at that point? So it's not a matter of you just learning the thing. It's not a matter of you mastering those questions. It's a matter of you getting this thing at heart. That it's gone, it's so deep into the heart. This morning I was explaining the final year students, you know, that famous story of Hercules and Abu Sufyan is in the presence of Hercules, the king, the Roman emperor, right? He's the highest, because Rome and Persia were the superpowers, like Russia and America, you say superpowers. So Abu Sufyan is in the presence of Hercules, right? So he's storming him with questions, right? One of the questions that Abu Sufyan was asked by Hercules, Herakl, did you see anybody turning away from his deen after he's accepted it? Did you see anybody turning away, nafratan ya bughdan anhu, because of dislike for the religion? Anybody disliked the religion and he turned away. Did you see anybody? Someone may have turned away from Islam, but not because of dislike for Islam, but because he wanted some wealth. He wanted some girl, right? That was the carrot that was put before him and he turned away. But on account of him despising or disliking Islam, did you see anybody? So Abu Sufyan says, no, I haven't seen this. At the end, after the whole storming session, this whole negotiation ended, now Hercules is speaking to Abu Sufyan, that I asked you about, did you see anybody turning away? And your answer was blankly, no, I haven't seen anybody turning away on account of him disliking Islam. So Hercules, his conclusion is kadhalikal iman iza khalatat bashashatuhu al-qulub. This is the effect of iman when the sweetness of iman gets into the heart. What? This is the effect of iman when the sweetness of iman penetrates the heart. Then you can't do without, then you can't give it up. When we're seeing a fluctuation within us, the fluctuation is because the sweetness of iman has not gone deep into the heart. Person is hooked up on a drug. Is it easy for him to throw it up? It's gone deep into the heart. Now you can't throw it. Drug may be something that you can't relate to, right? But you got a wife, and you're in a marriage for 25, 30, 40, 50 years, right? Now after 40, 50 years of pleasure, can you leave her? I ask you. So you say, no, after I enjoyed the sweetness at your hands, I can't give this thing up. Although, yeah, Buddha hai, wo Buddhi hai, right? He's an old chacha here and she's an old chachi there, right? But they can't give up the relationship because the sweetness had gone deep into the heart. Now you can't give it up. So that's the effect of iman. When the sweetness of iman gets deep into the heart. Now the question is that, then how do you get the sweetness of iman? I must shout you people, give me just about 45 minutes to talk. And everything, I must pack it up. Oh, these are concepts, deep concepts. And the concept has to be going deep into your heart. Right? So if you understand, you relate to the concept, then you know how to apply it. But I'll give you 5 minutes, 10 minutes to talk about deep concepts. Workshop, they ask you to do 5 minutes. Can you do it? Ask him. He'll give you 5 minutes to workshop. Can you work it out? So this comes in another verse of the Quran, 28th Sipara. La tajidu qawman yu'minuna billahi wa rasooli yuwaduna man haddallah. Right. The one that has got the sweetest of the iman, now what's the indication? He will dislike for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, he will love for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. He will break up with someone, father, brother, son, anybody, for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, and he'll make up with the worst enemy for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. So for them Allah Ta'ala says, Ulaika, look at the same verse, just think about it. Kataba fi qulubihimul iman. Allah Ta'ala has stamped iman in their hearts. You know, they say, cast in stone. When you say cast in stone, what do you mean? Something that you cannot obliterate, right? So when Allah Ta'ala cast it into your heart, can anybody obliterate it? So these fluctuations are coming up because you're not showing that type of loyalty to Allah Ta'ala. That anything Allah Pak dislikes, I dislike it. Anything Allah Pak loves, I will love it. And then you're asking about the fluctuation. Why am one day I'm high and a low? وَأَيَّدَهُمْ بِرُوحٍ مِّنْ And Allah Ta'ala supports you with a special strength. The strength is just allowing you to move on, just to fly continuously. Allah Ta'ala.